Butler gets baked, baseball begins, and Jimmy Mangos is back in the booth and off to the races. This is the Sports Radio Jax. Welcome to this week's installment of the Jax. Coming up over the next 60 minutes, UConn, Nelson Cruz, Baltimore Orioles, Fat Guys, the Masters, and what may or may not be Steve Nash's baby. As always, you can listen to us live at centennialondemand.com/centennial-internet-radio, or you can download the podcast by clicking on Centennial Internet Radio. You can also hit us up on Twitter at SportsJax. I'm Josh Lewinberg. To my left, Aaron Karolik.
What up?
And to my right, he's back.
That's right, I am back.
Jimmy Mangos.
Standing ovation.
Crowd that applause way. Was for Jimmy, by Jimmy, for the record.
Yep.
How's it going, boys?
Going good. Getting excited for May 12th. How about you, Jimmy?
I'm actually pretty excited for that, too.
Let's give some background here. Jimmy Mangos is, of course, back in the booth. And he's been in the news a little bit this week. Isn't that right, Aaron?
It's very much right.
On May 12th, George Fidel, who is a good friend of the podcast, he has appeared on the Sports Radio Jax before, will take on our boy, Jimmy Mangos, in a race for pride, and maybe more. We'll discuss that later. And there's a lot on the line for everyone in this race that's coming up. In just a couple weeks. Are you looking forward to this, Jimmy?
Actually, I am, because George has been running his mouth pretty lately, and I just want to tell George that, George, there's no chance. Even a prayer can't help you for this race.
You heard it there. Jimmy Mango says, is that a guarantee that a victory, Jimmy?
Pretty much, yeah. It's a guarantee.
Well, yes or no.
You never know what can happen between now and May 12th, right?
I see. Oh, okay. So.
You're starting to get a sense from all this gossip, all this talk that's going on here surrounding this race, that this is big. This is big. There's a lot surrounding this at this point. And I can't even describe how high the stakes are. All I can do is play this and hope that maybe this comparison will help you understand how much this race means to the life of Jimmy Mangos.
When we were in the ninth grade, they had us all line up at one end of the schoolyard for this big race to see who was going to represent the school in this track meet. Mm-hmm. I was the last one on the end. George was next to me, and Mr. Bevilacqua, the
What's that?
Mr. Bevilacqua, the gym teacher.
Oh, of course.
He was down at the other end. So he yells out, "Ready, on your mark, get set." And I was so keyed up, I just took off. By the time he said go, I was 10 yards ahead of everybody.
No.
Yes. I looked up, I couldn't believe it.
When the time the race was over and I had won, I was shocked. Nobody had noticed the head start.
Really?
Yes, and I had won by so much, a myth began to grow about my speed. Only Duncan suspected something was amiss. He's hated me ever since. And now he's back.
Well, what happened when you raced him again?
I never did. In 4 years of high school, I would never race anyone again. Not even to the end of the block or to catch a bus. And so the legend grew. Everyone wanted me to race. They begged me. The track coach called my parents, pleading, telling them that it was a sin for me to waste my God-given talent. But I answered him in the same way I answered everyone. I choose not to run.
Jimmy's ready. Jimmy's got some new moves.
Go, Jimmy.
Check Jimmy out.
Oh, Jimmy's down!
Godspeed, Jimmy Mangos.
In this case, I do choose to run, and I will choose to win.
I'd say Jimmy Mangos' physique is fairly similar to that of Jerry Seinfeld, so I guess that bodes well for Jimmy's chances.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? What are you trying to say?
You know, you guys are both, I don't know, decent.
I think I'm in better shape than Jerry Seinfeld.
You think so? Jerry, back in the 90s, was a younger man than
Plus, he was like 35 compared to my 24, you know.
Ideally, I'd like to show all of our listeners what we're dealing with here as far as Jimmy Mangos versus George Fidel, but because we can't do that, based on our medium of choice here, I'll give you some background. When asked this question, over the last 365 days, how many times approximately you would say you've been to the gym, George Fidel answered 208 times.
208 times. Very specific.
Really? I thought it was more than that.
208 times. Okay. Jimmy Mangos answered to the same question 40 times.
It's a blatant lie, Jimmy. You have never been to the gym before.
I swear, last winter I went a lot.
What gym? What gym did you go to?
It's called Anytime Fitness, right across the street from
look
my
it
house.
Look it up. Look it up, Aaron.
Yeah, yeah, right, look it up.
That's not true. Okay. That all right. I'll
and plus, I play soccer in the summer and winter, so that gives me, you know, endurance and the speed.
Oh, I'm not.
I'm
not saying that just because he goes to the gym, he has a he has an advantage because he's a built guy. But that's not going to help him necessarily in a race. But I'm just giving some idea as to the physique that we're dealing with here when it comes to George versus a more
svelte,
more lean and mean
lean
Jimmy.
A more undertoned version.
Listen, I weigh 165 pounds. George is like what, 220? Can you picture a guy at that size or weight beat a guy like me?
Listen, we'll be talking about fat guys later when we address Eddie Curry
not
and Shaquille O'Neal. No, that's
no,
what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
He's
we'll
heavy.
Be addressing fat guys. George Fidel is no fat guy. He's not.
He's
in good
shape. He's a machine.
But he's more like upper body type of, you know, builder guy. I never see him.
But
run.
The thing I've been talking about frequently when we've been discussing this race is that I believe George will tailor his training regimen to. He would gear it towards more towards like a racing type of workout rather than his usual weightlifting and eating lots of protein and stuff like that. He'll train more cardio.
He's got a very strong work ethic.
The thing is, you don't need to work out for a 10-second sprint. It's either you have it or you don't. And which in this case, I have it. George doesn't have it.
So this begs the question, because Jimmy speaks a big game, but like I said, George is in good shape. George is the favorite in this race, correct?
Yes, I would say, but we did take a poll this morning, and it seemed like the class was fairly divided in terms of their allegiance to either George or Jimmy, which it certainly would be interesting to set a betting line on this.
What does the class know, really? Had they seen me run before? Had they seen me play any sports? They look at George. Oh, George is a big guy. He's going to win. As simple as that. No, that's baloney.
I have some Jimmy Mangos quotes, actually. He was interviewed yesterday by the lovely and talented Michael Gomes. Mm. So let's see what we have here. I was on the track and field team back in elementary school, I believe is what you said.
That's right.
There is no way George could beat me. He weighs over 200 pounds. Not only is it a race, it's about our manhood. Even though I haven't ran any sprints since last summer, my body, I usually have an athletic body. People underestimate me, right? Don't think I can play sports, but they never seen me play sports before. I believe you just said something like that as well.
Exactly.
I'm pretty confident I'm going to beat George. Not only will I beat him, but I will destroy him. And that's cleaned up a little bit. There was some other language that can't be included in these quotes.
I really said that, didn't I?
I have one more quote from Jimmy that was a little more recent. He said, okay. When I beat George, he has to kiss my bottom in front of the
cleaned
whole school,
up as well.
School wearing a pink tutu and a Goldilocks blonde wig. So that's quite a statement there by Mr.
Let's actually address that. Do we think that there should be more of a stake in this race? I know there's a lot of pride on the line, and pride is all well and good, but should there be something at stake for you guys, for the person that wins versus the person that ends up losing?
Of course, it makes things more interesting. You know, you always want to add the stakes higher because it gets more people involved. It gets more people to watch. And I feel it should. I don't know if George has agreed to do this.
Well, then let's use this as a platform to propose something to George. I know all somebody right. suggested earlier loser shaves their head or something like that. I don't know. I'm just saying. What do you what would you suggest? What do you think is fair?
I like what Aaron said about kissing my butt, but I don't think George would do that.
George, nobody wants to see George. George subject to that. George
no.
is too good of a man for that.
Absolutely. I'd expect that from you, but not
yeah,
from George.
George is too upstanding.
So what do you guys think? Maybe I have no idea. Maybe. He could dress like a woman for a day in school.
Yeah, that's not
or
a bad
maybe
idea.
He could.
My idea was you'd have to address each other by Mr. for the rest of the year. So Mr. Mangos, Mr. Fidel. That's maybe a little bit on the.
It's a little lights, weak.
A little weak. Yeah, I agree. But just an idea.
Okay, that's not a problem to me. Sure, Mr. Fidel. I don't have a problem calling that now.
You say that now, but yeah, I think you would change your tune a little later in the year.
We'll see. We'll see.
Well, now that we've spent 10 minutes catching up with our good friend Jimmy Mangos.
I miss Jimmy.
I missed you too last
Craig
week.
Did a great job, but there's just a certain Mangos flair that just can't be replicated by anybody.
A certain presence in the booth that's felt only when you're here, I think.
Yeah, I got to deal with Greg and George tomorrow with our own show.
Ooh,
so,
oh, boy.
Should be interesting. There's a lot of tension between all of us right now.
Yeah.
Now that we've caught up with Mangos, let's catch up with some other individuals who we've talked about over the last few weeks in this podcast. We talked about Jose Canseco last week. I know you weren't here for that, Jimmy. Did you listen to the show?
I listened to most of it.
So Jose Canseco has been in the news a bit recently with the old switcheroo that he pulled with his brother. And we talked about him on Celebrity Apprentice. He actually, I have here on the lineup that he got fired, but he actually quit. He stepped away from the Celebrity Apprentice because he said that his father was sick and he couldn't continue. But then Richard Hatch, who some of you may know from the fine program Survivor, first season, he accused Canseco of making that up.
Wow.
But those of you who watch Survivor already know that Richard Hatch is going to hell. So that's what Jose is doing these days. He's no longer on the Celebrity Apprentice.
I personally don't watch either of those atrocious programs, so I have no idea what you're talking about. But I don't know. I got some other good stuff.
What's his brother's name again?
Ozzie Canseco.
Ozzie Canseco. Did he play baseball too?
Yeah, but he never did any home runs. Mm-hmm. He was just he had like 62 at-bats in the major leagues. Pretty inconsequential player.
A couple weeks ago, we talked about Charlie Sheen as well, and he's gone on tour recently. How is that going for him, Aaron?
Well, actually, his first show, which was in Detroit. Palace of Auburn Hills is where the show was. He was booed quite a lot. But actually, his second show, which was the next night, I believe it was in Chicago.
Yeah, that's right.
Actually, went pretty well. They actually had a moderator, a guy from Toronto, who was on the Fan 590 previous and the Q107. He was a moderator, and that seemed to go over better with the fans than just Charlie Sheen with his incoherent
people and yelling at people in the
incoherent
crowd.
Incoherent rambling. My favorite line is, you've already paid for this, so something of that.
Something of that nature.
Yeah. So
I wonder if he was drunk or not on the stage.
He was on something.
On many things. Charlie Sheen doesn't do anything without being drunk or high, so that's how he rolls.
What were you going to say?
I know that he's coming to Toronto soon, right? And I was curious if you guys were going to see him too.
Absolutely not.
If I had free tickets, I would go, but I'm not paying $90 to see Charlie Sheen.
Could be interesting, though.
Yeah, I guess it would be. I mean, you could go write a story about it, Jimmy.
We don't know how long he's going to live, right? So
yeah, it's probably he's pretty high up there in my celebrity
I took the under on 5 years.
Yeah,
you
so
did take the under on 5 years.
Yeah. I believe that was discussed on the program as well. Last week on the program, a couple weeks ago, we discussed Rebecca Black. And where is she now? She still sucks.
Yeah, she does suck.
Yeah, it's still terrible.
How many million views is she up to on YouTube? I heard it was close to 80 million now.
Really? Wow.
80 million views for that song. I really look forward to the second installment of Rebecca Black's.
She has another song coming up too?
Pardon me?
She's got another song coming up?
I'm sure. She's got to have a second song coming out.
Wow. Well, lucky her that she's rich now, right?
Oh, she's loaded. Loaded.
Well, she did her job. She's set for her life now. So.
Oh, yeah.
You guys want to talk about sports?
Sports. This is the sport. It's not the pop culture sports. Radio Jax, eh? Okay. Let's talk about sports.
Let's do it.
Some good sports going on these days.
How about the Butler game?
Game?
Millions of fans on the edge of their seats waiting to say the Butler did it and be incredibly corny and unfunny and just terrible, terrible people. But they didn't get the chance because they were handed it. They were killed.
Not really.
Wouldn't you say they handed the game to UConn more so than anything?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, UConn is a great team.
Yeah.
They've done very well in this tournament, but the performance by Butler, I mean, and I wanted Butler to win. I had money on Butler, and this was crushing to me. This is like a young Jimmy Mangos finding out that there's no Santa Claus. This is like Greg Hood finding out that wrestling is fake, which he still hasn't, by the way. I hope he's not listening to this. This is the worst thing that has happened to me since Rebecca Black.
Wow. It's quite a statement there. But yeah, obviously anytime a team shoots 18.8% in a national championship game, no less, it certainly says something. So maybe the national stage got to them. I know this team did pretty well for the course of the year and last year.
I saw it was 22-19 at halftime.
Yeah.
Three at halftime.
I said, there's no way I can't watch this game. It was a snooze fest for me. So I actually did watch wrestling too because I knew The Rock was there.
Oh,
so
God.
I had to see The Rock.
It was just a terrible game. I think Butler scored a point in the paint until less than 10 minutes left in the second half.
It was the first points in the paint came 13 minutes and 46 seconds into the second half.
So seven minutes left in the game.
Yep. Correct.
That's pathetic. And I think Matt Howard and Shelvin Mack combined to go 5-for-28 in that game.
Yeah, listen, you guys know I'm a stat guy, but I love sports enough to acknowledge that the best games are the ones that aren't told by numbers. They're the ones that come down to the last moment of the game where it's all about, exactly, where you can't tell the story of the game just simply by looking at the numbers. But in this one, unfortunately, you can. And the numbers tell all. You mentioned the shooting percentage. Butler went 8 minutes, 35 seconds in the first half with only one field goal.
Ouch.
Then they topped their own drought in the second half, going 13 minutes, 20 seconds with only one field goal. They shot two for their first 25 field goals in their... Sorry, the first 25 shots they took in the second half. They only made two. What else we got here? They didn't... Oh, sorry. It was 6:35 left in the game, and UConn had more blocks than Butler did field goals.
Wow.
9-8.
Let's not take anything away from UConn. They played a great game, and Butler is a team.
I'm scratching
that,
my head still over all
like
this.
UConn obviously was awesome. Jeremy Lamb in the second half had 12 points, almost outscoring Butler. But Kemba didn't have the greatest of games, but Napier had another good one. And Oriaki in the middle was very good, contending with Matt Howard, who was absolutely ineffective. So you got to give some daps to UConn. They had a great tournament. They rang off an incredible winning streak.
So did Butler, too. Man. You have to look at it. They were supposed to be out in the first round. Everybody picked them to be out by Old Dominion. And
Then they knocked off the number one
seed. And they were an eighth seed. It would have been the second eighth seed to ever win a championship if they won that.
Everyone's all over this tournament, as they should be, because of the excitement that it provides, in that a team like Butler in the eighth seed can prevail and can make it to the end. But I think this is the downside of that, in that when a team like Butler makes it to this stage, there's always the chance that we could end up with a game like this. Do you think for a second that we would have seen a game with these types of shooting percentages, with this final score, if it was Kansas versus Ohio State?
That's fair. That's fair, but you got to remember, a year ago for the national championship, Gordon Hayward missed a fadeaway jumper to win the game against Duke, which is not some small-time program like Butler is. So Duke's one of the most preeminent programs in all of college basketball. So if Gordon Hayward knocks down that jumper, then you might be talking about potentially back-to-back national champions. So, but obviously, that's unfortunate that Butler put up that.
I think this game, I think both teams were trying to play not to lose the game. You know what I mean? I think they were playing too conservative, not to make too many mistakes, and that's why it caused the game to be really boring. So, and plus, they're young kids and a lot of pressure on them. So the jitters got the best of them, I think.
Yeah, it just appeared to me that as soon as it was established that Matt Howard couldn't do anything inside, he missed a bunch of shots early on, and they were just getting thoroughly outworked in the middle with Oriaki and the other big men on UConn. Butler just went into a phase where they was just jacking up contested threes and low percentage shots, and that ultimately obviously caused a very low shooting percentage. And they just were settling for shots that were just low percentage, and that cost them.
They should have had a UConn versus Kentucky part two, because that game, that Final Four game, was awesome.
Yep.
And I think if it was UConn Kentucky, obviously it would have been much better finals than it was against Butler.
Yeah.
It's interesting, because you mentioned that Butler may have lost the game more than UConn won it, and there's so much talk, even still, surrounding Butler. But the fact of the matter is, UConn is the national champions at this point. Did the better team win?
Yeah, absolutely. UConn is a team that won the Big East tournament. They won the Maui Invitational, and they won the NCAA tournament. They were the status 13-0 in tournament play this year, and that says a lot about playing in high pressure situations on a national stage, especially like in the national championship. UConn came to play. They didn't play their best game, but they played good enough to win. And in spite of Butler's horrible shooting, you still got to give them the credit. And
comes down to his coaching as well, too. Jim Calhoun is one of the best coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Did you hear his pregame speech?
No.
It was not very arousing. It was very...
He seems very serious all the time. Very miserable type of guy.
Yeah, it wasn't one of your... something you'd expect before a national championship games in terms of the enthusiasm and pump it up. It was just calm. Let's go out there and do our thing. And it worked.
Coaching was a factor, of course, in Connecticut's victory, but how about the play of Kemba Walker in this tournament?
Oh, Kemba was awesome throughout the whole tournament. He didn't have his best game in the national championship, but he was absolutely instrumental in carrying UConn through a bunch of the games, and he really helped his draft stock, too. I can only tell you, I bet you he definitely goes in the top 10. I don't know if he's actually going to be a productive NBA player.
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's a senior, right?
Junior. You can come back.
He's a junior. Yeah, but what did he do the last 2 years? I never heard of his name until this season, right?
Yeah, but you got to remember, UConn, he was never the prime guy on UConn before this year.
23.5 points, 6 rebounds, just about 6 assists as well in the tournament. And he joins a very, very small group, very elite company when it comes to players that have averaged over 20 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists in the tournament. So with a game like this, a complete game per se from a point guard or a guard of his size, could this game not translate to the NBA in a way that we saw with a player like Tyreek Evans, maybe. I know Evans is a
he's
a
significantly
bigger guard,
larger,
but,
yeah. And Tyreek's a strong, strong kid too. You look when Tyreek isn't taking too many fadeaways. He's driving to the hole and drawing fouls or laying it up because he's just a beast. Kemba is a lot more frail. Maybe not frail is not the right word, but he's just a smaller guy. He doesn't have the same stature as a guy like Tyreek. I guess maybe the only guy you could think of in terms of similar stature is a guy like Monte Ellis, who, I don't know, maybe like a Steph Curry type too, same Golden State. But guys who are smaller, but Kemba can shoot. He's proven he can make big shots in the clutch. And I think that certainly speaks to his abilities in the NBA.
Will size hurt him in the NBA, Jimmy?
No, I don't think. I look at him. I don't think he has that much talent. I mean, I've seen the guy play, but he doesn't really impress me. I think he'll be like a
Matt Hayes won't be happy to hear that.
Well, obviously he's a UConn fan, but I think he kind of looks like a type of player. Like, remember J.J. Redick when he came out of the college? All the hype. He's gonna be a great player.
Yeah.
And he started on the bench for a couple years. I think that's the same thing with Walker. I can see him like a C.J. Watson type of player.
Oh boy.
It's possible.
Or a Ronnie Brewer type, you know.
Ronnie Brewer.
I don't see him as a huge star in the NBA.
No, I think he could fill it up, though, and that's certainly... Like, think of like Jordan Crawford last year, a guy who went late in the draft. He was traded midseason, and now he's ripping it up in Washington. So all you need is an opportunity, and if Kemba gets that opportunity with a team, then we could certainly see him thrive.
With the March Madness tournament coming to an end, what was a very good tournament in spite of the final game, we got a couple... Well... 3-6 entries into the Basketball Hall of Fame. How many actually went in? Three notables.
I know Chris Mullin, Dennis Rodman, Arvydas Sabonis.
Yeah.
And there's some
other guy named McGee, some short white guy.
Oh, God.
Yes. Who was that guy?
Some coaches.
We'll stick with the notables.
We'll stick with Dennis Rodman, Chris Mullin, and Arvydas Sabonis. Do you think this is a deserving group, AK?
Yeah. Chris Mullin is a 5-time All-Star.
I don't know about Sabonis though.
Oh, Sabonis is the most bona fide Hall of Famer in the group. I think you gotta look at his
career. He's the most controversial, I think, of those three going into
the
Hall of
Championship.
Think so, but you know, even still, you guys, this is a guy who came over from Europe when he was 31.
That's true.
He was the European Player of the Year five or six times prior to his even being in the NBA. And even when he came to the NBA, he was 31. As I said, he's coming off many injuries in Europe. We never really saw his true potential. So I think if you saw Sabonis come into the NBA when he's 21, 22 years old, he'd be a bona fide Hall of Famer.
But the fact is he didn't.
He didn't. It's true, shouldn't. But it's a pro basketball Hall of Fame.
Right. That's, yeah. Okay.
So you got to give him his credit for what he did in Europe. And he had a very solid NBA career when he was with Portland. He didn't put up jaw-dropping numbers, but he's a very solid 15-10 guy for some very competitive teams back in the 90s.
He had a great team, though, with Portland back then.
Oh, yeah. Rasheed and Steve Smith.
Bonzi Wells. Stoudemire, Pippen.
Yeah, good
squad. Brian Grant.
Good squad.
The talent he brought
Steve
to the
Smith.
Table. Well, you can keep going, can't you?
That's
the
it.
Jailblazers? Or is that before? That was a few years before the Jailblazers.
That was 2000, I think. 2000.
No, that was prime Jailblazers time.
That was an awesome.
Ruben
Patterson. The Kobe stopper?
Yeah.
The talents Arvydas brings to the table are unquestionable. He's one of the best all-around big men ever to play the game. Jimmy, how much do you think those European numbers and what he did while playing ball in Europe should be considered in a Hall of Fame bid?
Well, now that I look at it, I didn't know it was pro basketball. I thought it was just NBA.
No.
But since he's been spectacular, like you said, with a 5-time All-Star in Europe.
Player of the Year.
Player of the Year, okay. Then definitely should be in the Hall
Six
of Fame.
6-time European Player of the Year.
Six time. So he's like, was he better than Vlade Divac?
In Europe? Oh, yeah. Arvydas Sabonis
was the dominant
player. After he retired from Portland, he went back to Europe and was still a very quality player.
He's Russian? Was he?
No, he's from, Lithuania.
This is a very interesting group, those three players anyways, Mullin, Sabonis, and Rodman. Because normally when you think Hall of Fame, I think the general consensus is you picture all-around great players. Obviously, maybe Michael Jordan is going a bit too far on the end of the spectrum. But great all-around players, whereas these guys are specialty players, I think is safe to say. They've all carved out a very specific niche. Rodman is one of the greatest rebounders of all time. Mullin's a great shooter. Sabonis is almost a pioneer in what he was able to do for international basketball. So it's very interesting for me to see these three going in. Not to say that they're deserving or undeserving, but just based on the type of players they are and what they represent in the game of basketball.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's not just because they're not... They didn't put up these crazy statistics that you can look back on, and like obviously Rodman was one of the greatest rebounders of all time, and that can't be understated. Chris Mullin was part of Run DMC with Mitch Richmond, and Anyone got some crickets here?
Tim Hardaway.
Tim Hardaway, of course.
Tim Hardaway.
So on TMC, excuse me.
I don't think Mullen should go in the Hall of Fame just because of his haircut.
Yeah.
Or the fact that you can see directly through him.
Yeah, he was a little on the skinny side.
He could use a 10 or two.
Yeah, he could light it up though back in the day. And obviously Arvidas, as you said, was a pioneer for European basketball. So. Yeah, it's a little eclectic class. Eclectic, that's the word I was looking for. And it's certainly going to be interesting to see Rodman's Hall of Fame speech. That's certainly something I'm looking forward to.
To lead the league in rebounding 7 consecutive years, especially in the era in which he did it. And
titles.
Some of those rebounding numbers he put up, his career average, I believe, is 13. His highest average was just about 18, I believe. And that's he was the best, or one of the best at his craft.
Yeah.
Probably the best, I'd say.
Yeah, he's no Reggie Evans, but
no, he's and his height too. He wasn't a tall guy. This is a guy who outworked individuals to get his boards, yeah. And that's certainly something to be respected.
The matchups between him and Karl Malone are classics. Malone still hates the guy, but
you seen the Karl Malone commercials these days?
No.
Oh man, he's looking like at least 300 pounds.
Yeah.
It's blown
Malone
up.
Was
it's too bad.
Always overrated. He compared to Rodman.
Whoa!
Compared to Dennis Rodman.
Let's slow down.
Rodman had his Malone number every time.
So let's go from a big man in Dennis Rodman, who can rebound, to a bigger man in Eddie Curry, who can't rebound. Eddie Curry is getting a look by the Miami Heat going into the postseason. The Heat are talking about bringing him in, potentially signing him to a contract to have him for that postseason run. How poor of an idea is this?
You know, back in the day, Eddie Curry could hoop it up quite a bit prior to his gaining at least 200 pounds, and of course, there's many off-court issues, but it is well documented that Curry's boys with LeBron James. And if he was even like a mediocre, if he was in mediocre shape, maybe not tip-top shape, but if he could run around for a few minutes every game and maybe give the Heat a decent offensive option instead of a guy like Joel Anthony, who's more of a defensive-based guy, I think you could see a little bit of value there.
You know, he was a first-round pick, fourth pick overall for the Chicago Bulls.
Yep.
Yeah.
Remember that.
In the year of Tyson Chandler as well.
Yeah. Elton Brand, too.
Who would have thought that Eddie Curry and what he's done with his career would actually make Tyson Chandler's career look like a success?
It's a very good point. But in terms of pure skill, Eddie Curry has a lot of it. And for a big man who has a footwork that he used to have anyways, obviously Pat Riley sees something in Curry that he likes. Maybe he's
really
in better shape than reports are letting out.
He hasn't played a full season in 4 years.
Yeah.
Listen, this is a team that's not lacking in skill. They have skill, believe you me. At this point, they need to plug people into the holes that they have that will fit into that team. And I'm concerned that this move is wrong on so many levels, on the court and off the court, in that I don't believe his head's in the right place. I don't believe his weight is in the right place. I don't see how he's fitting in. And again, when it comes to a big man, yeah, they could use a big man, but they could use a big man who's going to rebound, who's going to intimidate, who's going to block shots. Eddie Curry is not that big man.
I agree. I think Eric Dampier is probably the likely starter going to the playoffs. If Udonis has him, that'll move him to the five.
Gone.
But Dampier's that guy, the intimidator, the shot blocker. But in terms of a secondary option off the bench, if they wanted to go a more offensive route behind Dampier, Curry could be that guy. But then again, I'm sure Pat Riley will make the informed decision as to whether or not he's in good enough shape to perform.
I don't think they need him, though. I think they have a good enough team to win it without him anyways.
I don't see him making an impact.
I don't think they will win it, but
I see this acquisition almost like the Celtics. I think it was a couple of years ago when they went on their championship run, picking up Stephon Marbury late in the season, and it was a risk, like I guess this would be, but I don't see it paying off just like that. Didn't either.
Might be right. Only time will tell.
Speaking of the Celtics, they had a large individual return for them the other day as well. Missing 2 months due to injury, Shaquille O'Neal made his return to the Celtics and left after 5 minutes and 29 seconds with a strained calf.
Wow.
Shocking?
No, not shocking. Shaq's a rather frail individual these days. He's getting up there in age.
He should have retired like 3 years ago. What's this guy thinking?
He's chasing that title. He wants to tie Kobe.
He already has, what, 5 titles? Four?
Yeah.
4 titles.
He wants to finish with as many, if not more.
He looks
more
so
than
out of shape, too.
Listen, when
sad.
When he's in the game, when he's on the court, I still think he can be effective. He was 3-for-3 before he went out of the game. Not to say that that means anything, but within his role, and I think he does. I think in comparison to, you look at older superstars around the league or people that used to be superstars, and Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter, people like that that have a tough time understanding their new role. I think Shaq accepts what he's able to do at this point. I think he still is a force inside. I think he still rebounds the ball well. I think he still plays a significant role within a team like Boston. I think he can help them win the championship that they're pushing towards. But the key there is staying healthy, staying on the floor, and that's what I doubt.
Yeah, I would argue that Shaq is almost essential for Boston to make a championship run. This is a team that's pretty much devoid of a center since they traded Kendrick Perkins. You can only stick in Big Baby there for so long. He's undersized, not able to rebound with some of the big boys in the East. So you're going to need Shaq and Jermaine and Troy Murphy, Nenad Krstić, all to pitch in and somehow fill that void left by Kendrick.
I don't think you can expect Shaq to play like 35 minutes
a
game.
No. But I think like you combine Shaq and Jermaine, the O'Neals.
Jermaine O'Neal, who's just coming off knee surgery.
Yeah. You toss him in there for 12, 13 minutes a game. Shaq can play like 22, and you can slide Garnett to the 5 for a bit, and you can make do with that.
He can barely play 5 minutes, and you're expecting him to play 22 minutes.
Yeah, well, he's at his age, too. He's a big piece for Boston.
With the Celtics having these struggles in the paint, especially now with Shaq going down again and Jermaine O'Neal's health a question mark, Big Baby being undersized, are they realizing now that they maybe have some egg on their face post Kendrick Perkins deal?
Well, I think that the logic behind the trade for Danny Ainge was that they weren't going to be able to re-sign Perkins anyway, so they may as well extract some value for him.
But did they? Jeff Green's contract is expiring as well.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, they felt that Green was more likely to re-sign in Boston than Perkins, especially maybe perhaps Ray Allen is at the end of the line in Boston. They could slide Pierce down to the 2, and Green could start at the 3, which would be very solid replacement for Allen. However, you got to think that Ainge maybe should just kept that team together and took one last run of the championship run with that crew, with Perkins and Garnett, Allen, Pierce, Rondo. Yep. Let those guys go at it once more. You didn't have Perkins in Game 7 last year. So, you know, like, it is a big risk on Danny Ainge's part, and to this point it hasn't paid off.
The big man Shaquille O'Neal looks pretty good when he's insurance off the bench coming in behind Kendrick Perkins, but when he is who you're counting on, that I question. So let's go from Shaq to one of his former teammates who was in the news this week for a very bizarre reason in Steve Nash, in a story fit almost for a Spanish soap opera. I believe they're called telenovelas.
Telenovela.
On Telemundo,
exactly.
Starring on Telemundo, Steve Nash. Reports circulating online identify former Phoenix Sun player Jason Richardson as being the father of the baby that was born to Steve Nash's ex-wife. And I stress the word reports because we've had a few reports recently from, I believe it was Therese Owens, who made some of those original claims, refuting the original report and including a picture of this Steve Nash baby, picture that appears like that the child is white.
Yes, does.
And that was the big controversy originally, that the baby came out, it was black. The assumption was this was Jason Richardson's baby. And things are pretty fishy here, because the divorce of Steve Nash and his now ex-wife came or was announced a day after the birth of the baby. Jason Richardson was traded from the Suns in December. So this is a pretty interesting soap opera we got going on here.
It is a extremely interesting soap opera. Actually, Therese Owens is is the site that really leaks a lot of these supposed rumors about affairs within sports. And initially it was reported that Leandro Barbosa might have had an affair with Nash's wife.
Really?
And then it went to, we know it's not true because Barbosa and Nash are still boys. They had an event together in Toronto recently when Phoenix was in town. But then Therese Owens reported that Jason Richardson was the father of Nash's baby. And then a few days later, they refuted their own story with the picture that Josh alluded to that clearly, in my opinion, clearly shows that the baby's white. I don't really see, you know, J.S. Richardson's not some, like, he's a black dude, you know, like, he's black. So
he's pretty tanned.
He's pretty black. So he's like Darius Miles Styles black. So, I believe if Jason Richardson were the father of a child, it would be a lot more apparent in its blackness than the picture that
Did you hear about the new report?
Is there a breaking
There's
news?
There's a new one. Breaking news. the suspected father of the Steve Nash baby, Jimmy Mangos.
Oh, I wish.
It's not Barbosa. It's not Jason Richardson.
Yeah, Nash's wife is a look.
Jimmy Mangos.
Well, how could that happen? She lives in Phoenix. I'm in Toronto.
You get around.
Not really.
When she was in town for the Phoenix Suns game a few months ago, I heard you guys met up at
What's
the
her name?
Party.
Alejandro?
What does she look like? I've never seen what she looks like.
She's pretty good looking. Don't worry.
So what, is she Spanish or something?
Yeah. Alejandra.
Alejandra.
Seems like she's been around or something. First reports about Richardson and then, what's the other guy's name?
Leandro Barbosa.
Barbosa, and now Channing Frye, Grant Hill. Who's next? Jared Dudley?
Jared Dudley.
Jared Dudley's getting in that, yeah.
Robin Lopez, maybe?
Dudley's balling. He's balling.
Lots of stuff going around here, though. I mean, now there's reports that Steve Nash was cheating on her. She's cheating on him. Jimmy Mangos is the father of the baby. It's everything swirling. Oh, what do you make of this?
Everything's coming up Mangos these days, but...
Poor Steve Nash.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe.
Slap in the face for Steve Nash.
You got to think it's some good PR. I don't know if it's his people pushing this, but Steve Nash is being made out to look like the angel in this case, when in reality, there were more reports that he was the one that caused the breakup
with
in the
end. 22-year-old girl.
Yeah.
She's 22 years
Tiger
old?
Woods style.
Damn.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. You really don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Reality, everybody is... doing it with everybody down in Phoenix, so...
I think Nash should stick to his Canadian girls.
Coming up, a rare golf update from Aaron Karolnik, and we'll talk opening week in the MLB. But first, I give you the Mangos Minute. So Greg filled in for you last week with the Mangos Minute. It was a Mangos Minute featuring Greg Hood.
I heard the egg thing.
The egging. He did a pretty solid job.
I can't believe he eggs some guy's house every day.
That's too much for even you?
I can't do that. It has to be caught. It's called the cops, you know? I have some boundaries, you know?
You know, in Cambridge, they just do whatever they want.
Yeah, whatever. Hey? Okay.
While we're on the subject of Steve Nash's baby, or the baby that may be Steve Nash's, that might have been quite a surprise for old Stevie if he was in the delivery room, baby pops out, and it's black.
Now it's the white.
Awkward. Awkward. Why don't you tell me about a situation that may have surprised you a little bit? Not to say that you had any black babies popping out on you, but something that blindsided you. Let's hear it, Jimbo.
Or something that was surprised, maybe, right?
Sure.
Okay. I don't know. I have to go. It happens from time to time. I go back when I go out with my friends, you know, before I drink, I get drunk, I go to a club. And every time I go to a club or a bar, pick up this girl, I think she's sexy. I think she's hot, right? So I get her number. We text for a few weeks, blah, blah, blah. Then the day comes when I'm supposed to meet her, I'm excited. And as soon as I meet her, I look at her, and she's nothing near what I thought she was. I mean, this girl looks like an elephant, for God's sakes. I mean, what? I mean, that just broke my heart. It happened a few other times, too, where I meet a girl that I thought she looked like Pamela Anderson or Carmen Electra. Then she looks like she's Rosie O'Donnell next time I see her. And that kind of, not surprised, but kind of breaks my heart to see, get my hopes up for all that. And another thing that surprised me is that I can't believe Greg Hood is straight. Tiger Woods, y'all. I'm just joking, Greg. I'm just joking.
That's the Mike Gomes anthem right there. Huge Tiger fan. All right, so let's delve into some Masters. We got the Masters coming up this week.
I'm going to give you some Masters theme music, too.
Oh, we got some Masters. Oh, beautiful.
Is that nice?
Yeah, it's very...
soothing.
It gives me spine tingles.
Even the music puts me to sleep, to be honest.
Well, you should. You guys got to tune in for the Masters. I got some good picks
and
here
plus
for
Jim
you.
Nance is doing the game?
Of course, Jim
I don't
Nance.
Think so.
Jim Nance is the Masters.
Jim Nance is a boring you-know-what.
All right. Well,
look who we have here.
We had Tiger, we had the Tiger theme music, and obviously discussion on golf or the Masters as in general wouldn't be complete without Tiger Woods. This is a guy who has four green jackets. He holds the lowest 72-hole score in Masters history, and in his last six Masters has not finished anywhere below sixth. So that's certainly something to be said. However, none of this changes the fact that Tiger has not won on the PGA Tour in nearly 17 months and hasn't been anywhere near contention since last year's Chevron Championship against Graham McDowell, where he lost in the playoff. Simply put, Tiger has not shown anything to suggest that his game is good enough to compete at the demanding level that Augusta demands from you. And even though he's tapping his new 22-year-old girl, a la Steve Nash, Tiger's game is not up to snuff for this week. My official projection on Tiger Woods, tied for ninth. Moving on, the favorite for this year's Master, Phil Mickelson, lefty. He was victorious last year at Augusta and is coming off a win at the Shell Houston Open last week. He shot a combined 16-under on the weekend and has become the clear favorite in Vegas and amongst experts to win back-to-back titles. If I were betting on one guy, I would bet on Phil Mickelson, but the value is just not there for me to bet on him. My official projection for Phil Mickelson, tied for third. My personal pick for Masters victories this year, guy to wear the green jacket on Sunday, is Nick Watney. This is a guy who has not finished inside the top 13 in any of his starts in 2011. He won the Doral Championship, which I attended, and has three top 20 finishes at Augusta. Guy is simply a boss. At 18-1, great value on Nick Watney. Secondary pick is Hunter Mahan, one of my favorite golfers. Also, one more interesting number here. Kelly Tillman of the Golf Channel found an interesting stat that says the average first-time Masters champion is 31.6 years old. Guess who's also 31.6 years old? Graham McDowell. 31-year-old from Northern Ireland is 34-1. Let me give you some long shots here. David Toms, 101-1. Jerry Kelly, 201-1. Book it. Let's go at Augusta, baby. Can't wait.
Moment at the Masters with Aaron Korolnik. That was fun.
Beautiful, beautiful.
You guys going to be betting on the Masters this year?
Absolutely not.
Oh, come on. It makes it more interesting, no?
Who is Martin Laird? How about that guy?
Martin Laird? Oh, he won a few weeks ago. He's great.
Why didn't you pick that guy to win?
I like Martin Laird.
He's number one right now.
No, he's not. But he's a 51-1 Martin Laird. It's also some good value, too. If you want to bet on someone, he's got a great putting stroke. Laird was very consistent on the greens, and that's obviously essential to Augusta.
Is Vijay Singh going to make an appearance?
I don't think so. I think Vijay doesn't have a good track record at Augusta either. You got to look at that.
Okay.
So the Masters are on the horizon, and baseball is underway.
Oh, yes, it is.
Summer sports are upon us, boys.
Finally. Beautiful, beautiful.
It doesn't look too nice outside right now, though.
Exactly.
A little dreary.
I don't hear any birds chirping.
Still feels like it's November, huh?
It does. Summer's coming. Well, I don't know about November.
Well, yesterday. Like
late October.
Okay, sure. Sorry.
Does October have a feel? What's October's feel?
I don't know. Halloween.
A little Halloweenish outside, yeah.
A little spooky?
A little chilly outside.
Yeah, Halloween's a ways away still, but.
Who cares?
I'm so happy to have baseball back.
It's a great sport.
As am I.
High quality sport.
And we've talked a lot about baseball over the last few weeks previewing it, and we spent a lot of time on the AL East and how this is unquestionably the best division in baseball. One of the best divisions
in
sports, if not the best. And they've delivered early on, I would say, in what has been a crazy start to the season. Orioles are in first, and the Red Sox are tied with the division-winning Rays in last.
And the Jays have the wild card right now.
A little premature there, Jimmy.
You got to be a little excited about
that. Are the Orioles for real?
What's interesting about the Orioles is that you'd expect that their hitting would be the thing that's propelling them into wins. However, it's their pitching. Guys like Chris Tillman, Jake Arrieta, Jeremy Guthrie have all posted quality starts early this season. And their big acquisitions in the offseason, like Mark Reynolds and Vladimir Guerrero, have been pretty much non-existent so far. So it's been a pretty big reversal in terms of the expectations that people had for the
Orioles. They've allowed four runs in their first four games.
I think that bodes well for them. And they also, one of their best prospects, Zach Britton, was called up, and he also posted a great start. But then again, they were doing it against Tampa Bay, so that says something, too.
We'll just Tampa Bay in a bit. But the Orioles are a big story, 4-0 for the first time in 14 years. But They're not coming completely out of nowhere. They have gone 38-23 since Buck Showalter took over in late August last year. And I'll give you some background here over why I like them so much. I know we've talked a lot about our Portland Trail Blazers bet, and maybe that's why I'm on the Blazers bandwagon a little bit. I feel the need to divulge my biases, be open with them, be honest. We're in a league, in a fantasy baseball league, in Centennial Sports Journalism, and it's a very unique league, wouldn't you say, AK?
Unique's the right word.
Where each individual is assigned a team. That team, you get their opening day roster, and from there, you go wherever you want with the team. You make trades, pick up prospects, do whatever you need to do. And I ended up with the Baltimore Orioles. A pick I felt good about going into the season, because I identified this team very early as a team that maybe could be a Cinderella-type team in that they could be almost like the Rangers were last year, where they have a very good, very deep offense, and a lot will depend on what their pitching is able to do, which has looked fantastic early on, but again, it's been four games. So I love me some Orioles right now. Jimmy, I believe you have the Jays.
Well, of course. I'm only one game behind the Orioles. 3-1, 4-0.
So you're catching up?
Oh, of course.
Nationals.
Nationals. What's their record right now?
I don't know. I don't want to know. It's not a good squad.
What do you mean? That can't be that bad. Better than Red Sox right now in Tampa Bay, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, they're 1-3.
Let's talk about Tampa Bay, because I don't think they're getting a lot of love. They're certainly not getting a lot of respect going into this year, having won the division last year. And you can argue that that's warranted, having lost Carl Crawford, Carlos Peña, Garza, as well as some pieces in their bullpen. And I believe Jason Bartlett's in that mix as well. They've lost some pieces, but they still have a lot of young players. They still have some talent. Is it warranted that they're getting no love?
Oh, absolutely, it's warranted. Especially, you didn't even mention the loss of Evan Longoria, who injured his oblique and is out for close to a month. But even more so than Crawford, Peña, Garza, I think the loss of their six bullpen members from last year, including their closer,
Soriano.
Benoit, Wheeler, Balfour. I'm missing some guys still. J.P. Howell's injured still.
Yep.
Like that's you can't go into a season with a completely different bullpen, especially a bullpen that has very little experience with guys in late innings like Jake McGee and Joel Peralta, Kyle Farnsworth. These guys aren't legitimate major league stop. Maybe Peralta's maybe the only guy out there, McGee to some extent, but when you lose that much of your bullpen, it's going to take a toll on you. That hasn't cost them yet, but their offense is struggling even more than anything.
Scored 3 runs against the Orioles over the weekend and then lost 5-3 to the Angels on Tuesday night.
Their offense struggled last season, too. I mean, the pitchers were the ones who carried them throughout the season.
And now with those big bats gone, and like you mentioned, Longoria injured.
Matt Garza, one of the best pitchers, too, right?
Yep. So there's a lot of pressure now on guys like Manny Ramirez, who's been just dreadful to start the season.
He's hurt now, too.
Yep.
Scratched today.
Yep. So he's going to have to step up when he comes back. You have Zobrist, who's slotted at the third spot, who, if this was 2 years ago, might belong in that third spot, having lost almost all of his power last year. That position might overwhelm a hitter like Ben Zobrist. I don't know about this team. I think that they're better than people are giving them credit for, especially once guys start coming up from the minors. You have the young center fielder there. What's
Desmond
his name?
Jennings.
Desmond Jennings. So I do believe they're better than they've played thus far and better than they're giving credit at this point. I do think that their starting rotation is still strong. We'll see Hellickson going tonight.
Yeah, oh, that's exciting. Their starting rotation is still very strong, but aside from that, especially with Longoria hurt, they're very weak in both their bullpen and their offense. They're going to need big years from B.J. Upton. It's pretty slim pickings there for Tampa. They could finish fifth in the AL East.
I think so, too. I can see them going from first to last. I mean, you said their rotation is strong. I don't see it. Other than David Price, I don't like their pitchers at all. I look at Shields. His ERA last year was over 5.
I think Shields will have a bounce back.
I like Shields,
really?
Too.
I never liked Shields.
Neiman and Wade Davis are a little sketchy, but aside from that, I like Hellickson a lot.
Davis was a 5 guy last year. Now he's a 3rd guy.
Yeah.
Just based on experience, I mean, Hellickson, I think, will outperform.
I don't know. I just don't see this team.
Oh, it's Hellickson versus Dan Heron today, I think, is the matchup. It's
gonna be not sweet. Bad. Not bad, indeed. A team that most people pegged as the consensus winner of the AL East. Boston Red Sox are 0-4 to start the season. Concerned at all?
No, not at all. This team is uber talented, and I don't use the word uber very often, but when you have offensive pieces like they do, and a very strong bullpen, and a starting rotation that has its weak spots, even if Josh Beckett and John Lackey are decent, this is a team that should win 90 games, no problem. 95, 100 games, no problem.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second here because I do believe that their offense is incredibly strong. But just like I think people are hating on the Rays a little bit more than they should, I think people are loving the Red Sox a little bit more than they should. People are all over the Yankees to start the season or before the season about their starting rotation being weak, whereas we're seeing some holes in this Boston rotation. John Lester is obviously a stud, but we've seen John Lackey get exposed early on. We've seen a couple other of their starting pitchers as well have a tough time. Josh Beckett looked better than last year.
Beckett's the number four guy now. I can't believe that. He's number four in the rotation right now? Wasn't he the ace last year? How did that happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how it happened. Look at his numbers from last year.
I think you got to take some of their their first weekend performances with a grain of salt. They were playing in Texas. It was just notorious.
They were outscored 26-11. Yeah. That's
Well, they're hitting
pretty outrageous.
Like these guys are, they have so many stud hitters. It's bordering on.
And how do you explain the loss to the Indians yesterday?
Yeah, it's just one game. I wouldn't worry about Boston at all. I know the fans in Beantown are panicking, but
I don't think they are. They can win 10 games in a row within like a snap of a finger.
You're absolutely right.
Just like that.
There's probably no team in baseball that has as much talent.
I bet you by next week they'll be over 500.
Speaking of some of that new talent that they got, Adrian Gonzalez has started off okay, 5-for-19. Carl Crawford has been just awful, 2-for-15, 1 RBI. He was actually dropped to 7th in the order on Sunday. Is he overrated? Are we seeing some of that to start the season?
Can't say it was only 4 games.
I understand that. I'm just asking in general, as a player, he was given a massive contract this offseason. Is he worth it? Because my personal opinion, I don't believe that he is.
Carl Crawford's not worth $140 million, whatever he got. I think anyone could tell you that. But the Red Sox had money to spend. They were bidding maybe against themselves or against the Angels, who just went out and got Vernon Wells instead after they lost on Crawford. But Crawford is a very good fit in that lineup. Still adds an aspect of speed, which aside from Ellsbury, the Red Sox are a little thin on. And this guy's a very solid outfielder. Could provide a very solid OBP. While he's not the prototypical three-hitter, which is where he was being used in Boston, I wouldn't surprise me if you see him move up to the one or two hole. You hit Ellsbury first, or you hit Crawford first, and you go Pedroia. Then you go Gonzalez, Euclid, you move Ellsbury down to 8 or 9 hole and add that another dimension at the bottom of the order. So I think it's just a matter of tinkering. They got some new pieces in Boston and Terry Francona, but we'll figure it out.
I'm going to throw something out there, and you're not going to like it. Last year, Curtis Granderson went to the Yankees. Fantasy owners were loving him in drafts last year. He was going very high. I do think Carl Crawford is better than Granderson.
Yeah.
But I can also see Carl Crawford having a down year this year and certainly not living up to the expectations that were placed on him by the Red Sox with the contract or even by fantasy owners who drafted him very high.
Yeah, well, especially with Crawford hitting the three hole, he's not going to get as many stolen bases as he did in past years with Tampa Bay. They always had him higher up in the order, and that's going to cost him. He could hit 15 home runs and steal 30 bases, and that's obviously not nearly worth, that doesn't justify a first-round fantasy pick. So his owners could be disappointed, but If I'm owning Carl Crawford right now, I preach patience.
You said he can hit 30 stolen bases. I mean, reach stealing 30 bases, but he has never done that in his career.
Carl Crawford has never stolen 30 bases?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Curtis Granderson.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, Crawford, obviously. Crawford's going to get like 50 this year, probably.
Probably not, but I don't know. Granderson, everyone thought when he was playing in Yankee Stadium that he was just going to prey on that short porch. And he really didn't. He hit close to 25 home runs, and he was injured for quite a bit of the year. But I like Granderson as a comeback potential.
While we're on the Yankees, I mean, I'll give you credit here because you stepped up. They were your World Series pick. Everyone all over the Red Sox. You took the Yankees, and the Yankees are looking good. Mark Teixeira, for a change, is starting off in April, balling, 4 home runs, 10 RBIs. He's looking good. They're looking good. Jorge Posada slotted in that DH slot is off to
Derek Jeter still sucks.
A fat start as well. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. Well, Teixeira with 4 home runs in the first 5 games.
Impressive.
If you go by past numbers, Teixeira's a guy who usually hits like 220 in the first 2 months with like very little power, and then just goes on an explosion in the second half. So if he's raking this early in the year, I don't see a reason why Teixeira couldn't be up to close to 50 home runs.
There's another team that we're forgetting here in the AL East.
Yeah.
Who could it be?
Who's that?
The Tigers?
Toronto Blue Jays, perhaps?
Oh, Blue Jays. They're a decent ball club. What do you think, Jimmy?
Decent. I think the 3-1, a better record than the Yankees, who was 3-2.
Could very well be 4-0, too.
Exactly. If it wasn't for Adam Lind's first pitch swing.
You're going to lay that whole loss on Adam Lind?
Maybe a part of it to John Roche.
Yeah.
They've brought it in all four games. There's no denying that. Going into this season, the headliner was Jose Bautista. The contract that he got, will he be able to live up to it? And to start the season, he's pretty much carrying off where he stopped last season, going 5-for-11, 2 home runs. He's going to miss this series against Oakland with the personal matter. It's a baby.
His birth of his first child.
Congratulations.
I'm playing against
it's not
Jose
Jason Richardson's
Bautista.
Baby, is it?
It's Jimmy Mangos' baby, perhaps.
But he's looked good.
Yeah, Bautista looks like a pretty safe bet, too.
More impressive than the numbers, or more impressive than the home runs and the 5-for-11, maybe the 4 walks, and especially that big walk that he took to load the bases in game 3 before that Adam Lind at-bat that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Still, there's still those that would be skeptical of Bautista repeating last year, and I don't think anyone still would wager that he's going to come close to 50 home runs.
Could be although 40.
I think he definitely could be 40. I even said when we were speaking with our esteemed guest Shai Davidi a few weeks ago. Was it last week? Yeah, it was last week. The time just flies by.
Doesn't it?
Shai thought that Jose Bautista could be a very valuable asset, will be a very valuable asset for the Blue Jays, and it certainly appears that way early on.
Bautista was slated to open the season up as the third baseman. Instead, Edwin Encarnacion gets the nod. He started 2 games at third so far with 3 E5s.
Not surprised at all.
3 errors. How far along the line is he going to lose this job at third if he continues to play as poorly as he had?
I think if he continues the way he's been playing on defense, I mean, I think really, but I think he's warming that third base up for Brett Laurie to come up. I don't know when, maybe in June, July, but isn't it Jason Nix play third base too?
Yep.
So he's played a couple of games too. He's looked pretty impressive, more impressive than Encarnacion so far. So if he continues to play as bad as he has been, then I could see Nix take over that starting role.
Has Edwin done enough with his bat to justify his spot in the lineup and at third base so far, AK?
This is a guy who has immense power when he's given a chance in the lineup. His batting average will never be at Ichiro Suzuki type levels, but Encarnacion has shown time and time again that he can hit jacks with the best of them. And you just got to keep slotting this guy in there, and he's going to get his whacks. He's going to hit his dingers somewhere along the line. Whether or not he's a big enough liability at third base to move him to the sole DH spot, and I guess it's John Farrell who thinks that the Jays are better off with Rivera at DH instead of Encarnacion there and sliding Bautista to third base. Obviously, he doesn't feel comfortable with Rivera in the outfield, or he would go with that lineup. So
I think it's still important for guys like that to be in the lineup, especially because we're seeing a new look Blue Jays team that's predicated a little bit more on speed, running the bases, taking that extra base. And having guys like an Encarnacion or Rivera in the lineup who still have that power potential, I think is important, especially because we've still seen the home runs in the first few games, 6 home runs in 4 games, but we're also seeing a little bit of speed, especially with Rajai Davis and who else we got? Aaron Hill stole
Aaron
a base
Hill.
The other
Aaron
day.
Hill, 2 stolen bases so far.
My boys. Yeah.
They're being more aggressive.
You know Escobar?
Yeah.
Got a couple steals, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I like the way they're playing like that. But I don't like Rivera as a DH, though, really. I don't like him as a player. He just looks sloppy.
Yeah, Rivera
he's very
slow. As you said, Rivera is a stopgap. Brett Laurie will be filling in, whether or at some point, maybe will it be a third base, and Encarnacion slides to DH, and then you'll have Bautista back in right field, something like that. But I do believe that Brett Laurie will be up.
How come Aaron Sibby hasn't been playing every day? I see Molina.
I think a lot of it has to do with his management of the pitchers.
Young pitching staff.
Right.
It helps
Brandon Jose Morrow. Well, you've seen that. Yeah. Kyle Drabek looked really good with Jose Molina. And even last year when Aaron Sieve was catching towards the end of the year, some of his pitchers were getting lit up. So more experienced Molina might bode well for the pitchers in the long run.
Let's play a quick game, and we'll start off with the Blue Jays. Are they for real? Kyle Drabek, Jimmy, is he for real?
I think so. I don't know about this year, but I think he's on a pinch count this year, but I think Drabek's for real for years to come.
The 4-1 Kansas City Royals, AK, are they for real?
not until Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, and those big, big prospects they have down there in Kansas City come up. But the future's looking a little brighter in Kansas City.
4-0 Cincinnati Reds. Are they for real?
Of course. They shorted last year. They're going to short again.
Even with the pitching staff being a little bit sketchy?
Yeah. But, you know, they got Francisco Cordero as a closer. A guy that I got from you.
Oh, boy. Nelson Cruz became one of only three players to hit home runs in the first four games of the season, joining Willie Mays and Mark McGwire. Pretty esteemed company. Is he for real?
Oh, absolutely. Nelson Cruz is one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball. When he stays healthy, this is a guy who's been plagued with injuries throughout his career. If he can put together a full season, no question he'll be top of the league in home runs. At the top. Maybe not at the top, but close to the top.
If he can stay healthy, being the key words as well. All right, well, that's the show for today.
Great show.
Hey, as always.
You forgot Jimmy Garcia.
Jaime.
Yami. I don't know. However you want to pronounce it. But yes, I believe he's for real as well. We're short on time, Jimmy. Jeez.
Okay, sorry.
But I'm happy to have you back. It was good to have Jimmy back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was okay. I miss looking at Greg.
we'll attach a picture to the back wall of Greg Hood for next week.
Let me get Jimmy to wear a Greg Hood mask or something like that.
Really?
Maybe.
So are you straight?
Wouldn't be the first time he was forced to wear a Greg Hood mask.
What?
Never mind.
I don't get it.
Thank you for listening. Join us next week on the Sports Radio Jax. Bitch, I come across, I think I want them. Look at how I roll when I see him, then I'm on them. Cup full of liquor and a pocket full of condoms. Lord, I can't lie, I'm a dog, I'm a cheater. Baby, mama gone, cause I ain't not a treater. Shout out to my Isha, shout out to Latisha. Shout out to my shorty with that little white beamer. Feeling like a king, got women that'll treat me. I be going hard, got a dime down in D.C. Yeah, my wife be home and I'm wrong for what I'm doing, yo. I be out creeping line, said I'm at the studio. I got women in the herbs, women in the hood. Yeah, my wife be mad cause she know I'm no good. Man, I'm just a dog, I'd be faithful if I could. But I'm Tiger Woods, yeah, I'm Tiger Woods. Go get 'em Tiger, yeah. Get 'em Tiger, sing. Go get 'em, get 'em, get 'em, get 'em Tiger, sing. Get 'em Tiger, yeah. Get 'em Tiger, yeah. Go get 'em, get 'em, get 'em, get 'em Tiger, yeah. I got a stripper named Bird in Miami.